one of the best things to root one in one's faith is extending hospitality to other people, really getting to know them, spending time with them, coming to care for them. When you're able to do that and see another creature made in the image of God who may not agree with you on all the political figures, but is loved by yes. God, and be able to appreciate who they are and were made to be, there's something that's really rooting and grounding about that.
On In Good Faith, we believe that all faith traditions have something to teach us about how God is working in the world and in our lives. So join us as we listen and learn and discover how speaking with people of other faiths can strengthen our own faith and even our own practice. We all want to change the world, but we don't know how to do it. And so sometimes we start with one simple thing that's maybe within our power, like we notice the neighbor has trouble bringing in their groceries or taking a heavy trash bin out to the street. So we decide we'll do those things for them. And it's friendly. It helps us connect. It makes both of us feel good. And that changes the world in a way. But sometimes changing the world needs more than one person. I'm thinking of a time we had to replace our roof. The roofers arrived. They were throwing down the shingles, filling our entire yard. And we had decided we were going to save money by cleaning that up ourselves, and it had to be done that night. And so when they finished, my wife started picking up these heavy shingles, and I said, I have some of my men's group at church coming over to help. But she was very skeptical that we could get it done before dark. But sure enough, about 10 men from our congregation arrived with a giant flatbed trailer, and within an hour, we had the entire yard cleaned up. All the shingles on that trailer headed for the dump. My wife was dumbfounded. She hadn't grown up going to a church, so she hadn't seen the power of working together like that in a community. But I'd helped enough other people that I knew when I asked for help, they'd show up. So sometimes to change the world, you need an organization. And today's guest is part of an organization that's way bigger than my church's men's group and is trying to accomplish good works on a much bigger scale than just my roof. Sherry Harder is president of the Trinity Forum, a D.C.-based think tank. Previously, she's worked in politics, including as special assistant to the president and director of policy and projects for First Lady Laura Bush and senior counselor to the chairman of the National Endowment for the Humanities. She's also a senior fellow at CARDIS, an editorial board member of Comment Magazine, a current board member of the Convergence Center for Policy Resolution and Faith and Law, and an advisory board member of the National Museum of American Religion.
The Trinity Forum has been around for over 30 years. We were started in 1991 by Oz Guinness and Al McDonald, along with a robust board of folks. There was a sense early on that there needed to be a place for leaders to think together about what mattered most in life. It was a Christian organization. In many ways, they describe it as being merely Christian in the C.S. Lewis sense, non-denominational, and certainly open and welcoming to people of all faiths and none. So we try to essentially cultivate, disseminate, and promote the best of Christian thought for the common good, and have three different focus areas of faith and public life, the arts and humanities, and spiritual formation. Of course, those three different areas of focus all relate to each other. There's a great deal linking spiritual formation with character formation and the character of our civic life. We've chosen those three areas where a lot of our programming focuses. Our programs include in-person events, lectures, reading groups and discussions, a podcast called Trinity Forum Conversations Podcast, and online live discussions with different thought leaders to talk about some of those big issues.
Well, I've been diving into some of the podcasts, which has been fun to get started on that. I do want to ask about this phrase, disseminating the best in Christian thinking for the common good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I find myself of late wondering, is there an agreement about what that is, the common good? And has that changed during your tenure, the way people think about that?
It's a great question, Steve. And I do think what the common good is has become a more contested concept, for sure. One of the things that we try to do at the forum is essentially extend what you might call intellectual hospitality, to welcome people into a conversation. We're explicit about coming from a faith-based perspective. We do believe that while there are many things that people of good faith can think differently about, there's also some areas of commonality in terms of what it means to follow Jesus. We can talk about what it means to love God and love one's neighbor in the public sphere as well as the private sphere, and understand that people of good faith may arrive at very different conclusions about what the best policy prescription is. But we should also have some common ground or a starting place to have those discussions, understanding and acknowledging that we are made to worship and love God and to love and care for each other.
I hope we can still call that a common basis. I think we can still.
I sure hope so. And one can invite other people who may not share a Christian faith into that kind of conversation. But one would hope that at least as Christians, we can agree that what we are called to is to love and worship God and to love our neighbor.
Cherie, I wonder if I can jump back. Were you always a person of faith? Tell me a bit about your journey, and then we'll delve into some of what you do at the Trinity Forum.
I was brought up in a Christian home. It was a more, I guess, fundamentalist, you could say, a very conservative Christian home, and have wonderful parents and a wonderful family. And as a probably fairly annoying or obnoxious high school student, was one of those debate geeks. And so, I was always asking questions and trying to figure out what it all meant. I grew up in a small town in New Mexico, a town of around 5,500, and essentially just grace of God and a gift was essentially rolled off a mountain and found myself at Harvard. And suddenly to be amidst a lot of brilliant students who had very different presuppositions about who we were as humans, what we were here for, what the good life looked like. And, that prompted all sorts of questions. And as an adult, after graduating, I came to D.C. I worked on Capitol Hill for a number of different bosses. And that's a very interesting place to see different conceptions of what the good is and what different conceptions of who God is play out in terms of a clash of ideas. And there have been ways my understanding of faith have changed over time, in that growing up in a very sort of strict, somewhat fundamentalist household, there was a real emphasis on obedience, on right doctrine, perhaps more rigid lines between what was right and what was wrong in terms of the interpretation of doctrine or the interpretation of Scripture.
Right.
As I've gotten older, have seen that, there was a stream that I grew up with, a stream of Christianity and Christian thought. And growing older has exposed me to the larger ocean that is there. And also impressed on me just how important it is to worship God, not as just the truth, but also the way. And so have had opportunity to think more about what it means to follow Jesus in the ways that he lived, as opposed to like the emphasis on parsing controversial aspects or contested aspects of doctrine.
Some would say that faith might grow cold or even wither working there in the Beltway. It's like when people say, I don't really want to know how the sausage is made. That could be very discouraging. Yeah. Clearly, because of the work you've done, and from what I've heard in doing a bit of research and hearing you speak, you have the intellectual chops to do what you do. But I see you also emphasizing the spiritual aspect. Is that what helps you hold on and gives you hope to keep pushing ahead rather than throwing up your hands, as I think some people today are doing? Like, there's not even cooperation between parties. There's no assumption that this person I'm adversarial to policy-wise will then be my partner on something else in the future. It seems to have grown away from that at the moment, at least. Yeah. Is that what helps you hold on?
Yeah, these are discouraging times to be in D.C. One sees a fair amount of faith being instrumentalized and weaponized for political purposes. Often, when that happens, there is disregard of following the ways of Jesus, and, you know, an emphasis on, you know, a particular policy outcome, perhaps allegiance to various political figures. Mm-hmm. And in some ways, while seeing what could be described as the rise of idolatry in politics, and there's always been a certain idolatry of politics. And when I use that term, I guess what I'm trying to say is essentially making the non-ultimate ultimate. I definitely believe that our politics is important. There are real life and very morally significant consequences to whether justice is done, to how we love our neighbor, to whether we care for the least, the last, and the lost, whether we invest in services that can save lives and help people, whether we can count on the rule of law, whether we can count on the functioning of government. Will the ambulance come if called? You know, those are all really important things. One of the core beliefs of the Christian faith is about what's ultimate, the first and foremost commandment being to love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. The second one being to love your neighbor as yourself. And if that first commandment is somehow usurped, distorted by a belief that your primary allegiance belongs elsewhere, I think you can count on bad things happening as a result. Mm. Part of what makes our current times kind of discouraging is you do see more instrumentalizing, more weaponizing of faith towards some fairly crass political ends, which is discouraging, but also in some ways motivating in that it feels like there's all the more need for different people and different organizations to try to articulate a different way.
You've been an advisor to Senator Bill Frist, to Sam Brownback. And as you look back, being an advisor from a faith perspective, have there been some wins? I don't know that most of us picture that our congresspeople or senators are reaching out and asking for faith perspectives, but I think in some cases they are.
One of the big surprises to me as a young college graduate many moons ago when I left college and came to D.C. is I had heard, especially growing up in a small town, that D.C. was this really godless place. And you get to town and you realize, oh, no, there's wonderful churches here. Many of the folks in political and policy circles are very thoughtful people of faith who take their faith very seriously. And it does, you know, inform their life and their thinking and their priorities and decisions. When I served on Capitol Hill, my sort of policy portfolio wasn't just faith issues. It was broader. It was a whole variety of, you know, whether social issues or economic issues or the like. You know, members of Congress are full people. Like, you know, there's varying degrees to which their faith might affect their outlook. I actually found that many members of Congress were very interested in trying to think through a lot of those thorny issues along moral and spiritual lines and wanted to do the right thing. There was a sense, at least a greater sense, you know, in the 90s and in the aughts that, you know, that the politics wasn't ultimate, that it was not the source of meaning in life, that prudential decisions had to be made. A lot of politics, to borrow a phrase from Reinhold Niebuhr, was proximate solutions to insoluble problems. If you approach, you know, politics or political decision-making along the lines that, you know, Niebuhr talks about, like, look, there's going to be bigger problems and more intractable problems that can ever be fully solved. And you won't have resources sufficient to do it. You won't have information sufficient to do it. But if you've been put in that position, part of your responsibility is to do the best you can with what you have for the right ends. And that's the responsibility you're entrusted with. Knowing that you probably won't get it done perfectly, that there will be unintended consequences to whatever you do, that it'll likely need to be revisited. But to understand politics with that kind of mindset, I think makes it a lot easier to be gracious and forbearing towards those with whom you disagree, as opposed to a more idolatrous view of politics, like this is the ultimate, this is the end. If you don't do such and such now, it all is going to burn down, which tends to make for a much more apocalyptic politics.
Fear in people, in the general populace.
and inspire fear, inspire anger. Rarely do people do their best thinking when they're angry and afraid. It kind of inspires both a confusion and a deep division, too.
I've heard people say, we need a reset in politics. I don't know that we're going to get that or that that's the work of a week or even a year. But what you're talking about, I think, can lead to that. You had a very recent reset, and I've decided to be happy for you and joyful and celebrate rather than slightly envious. It seems more in keeping with the Christian way of your time on the Camino de Santiago, that you went and walked that pilgrimage. What was that like to suddenly be cut off from so much of your daily push and pull and weighing of choices and be in a whole different spiritual mindset?
Yeah. Oh, it's a lovely question, Steve. And yes, I did just recently walk the Camino. My board graciously offered me a 4-month sabbatical, first sabbatical of my life. I have decided I am a big fan. So I've never had one before. Wouldn't mind having one again. It was a wonderful time. One of the things I chose to do with that time was to walk the Camino. I walked the Portuguese Camino, which is a little bit shorter than the Frances, the main route, but started in Lisbon. A lot of people start further north in Porto. So it was still, you know, probably around 400 miles or so. There, I skipped one or two stages, so I wound up walking about 320 miles, doing 1 week with my husband, another week with a girlfriend, and the last 2 weeks I did solo. And so it was a wonderful time to unhook from the day-to-day, to detach at least temporarily from all of the controversies, the arguments, the food fights that swirl on a day-to-day basis. We were talking earlier about understandings of the Christian faith. One of the things that was just so lovely about it is you're walking through, or at least I was walking through, a lot of, you know, rural Portugal, when every small town, there's a little church, which is usually unlocked, you know, where pilgrims can go in and pray. It was such a beautiful reminder of the historic faith and how that transcends our current fights du jour in D.C. It was also just wonderful to be in nature all day long.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's something, I think, kind of medicinal about just, you know, you spend all day walking in sunshine amidst flowers and forest and just attending to the creation. And it was also a good reminder about how much of our experience is what we pay attention to. I'm, you know, certainly not at all immune to having my attention sucked up, you know, by the contentious and the trivial and the, you know, whatever the food fight is and who said what and who did what to whom. And it was a restorative thing to take a step outside of that and just spend the day. There's something meditative about just walking too.
Yes.
Meditative, yes. Kind of, you know, conducive to prayer and reflection. It almost felt like a shower for the mind. I loved it. If you're interested, I would definitely recommend it.
I'm sold. Do you feel like you have the chance to make connections with other pilgrims along the way? Because I imagine you pass each other and then someone rests, you pass each other again, and you perhaps see some familiar faces?
Oh, that's exactly right. You know, in a way, that was another really lovely thing about the Camino is, I'm sure in your job as well, when you lead an organization or in a leadership role, you spend so much of your day trying to make things happen. There's a to-do list to get through. There's agenda items, you know, figuring out what needs to be done, the sequence, this, that, or the other. One of the lovely things about the Camino was, in a way, just receiving each day as a gift in that, you know, I knew I had to walk, I knew how to get started, but then exactly what you would say, you would encounter certain people, you would strike up a conversation, you'd walk with them for a little while. There was an organic quality of meeting up with people, talking with them for a while, and splitting up, perhaps seeing them again. Some people you expect to see again and you didn't, and others you wound up running into a number of different times. And you couldn't really control it. It just would sort of happen. And in some ways, I also found that kind of delightful in its way, just to look at the day almost as something to receive, and the interactions that would happen, the conversations that would happen, as opposed to something that I needed to make happen.
Well, that's a beautiful life philosophy. It actually can help everyone unclench just a little bit. Because you've worked, and one of the focuses is arts, interestingly enough, with the Trinity Forum, how does that tie in with the overall mission? I wonder if you'd say a little bit about that.
Really, what that goes to is our apprehension of the beautiful and our imagination. So many Christian thinkers and artists throughout time have talked about, in a way, almost the baptism of the imagination that happened as a result of their love for a relationship with God, opened up new ways of thinking about or understanding the beauty of the divine. So much of the Christian faith is not only about a set of presuppositions or adherence to a creed, it's about love. And part of what makes us love something or someone is perceiving the beauty in that person. Part of the reason we focus on the arts and humanities is, you know, in addition to the fact that there is an incredibly deep and rich Christian intellectual tradition in that area, but ultimately to help us better know, see, love, and enjoy God.
Well, I love this inclusion of the arts that the Trinity Forum focuses on. In fact, I can think of a time when I was a teenager and I'd always kind of accepted what I'd been taught, but it was when I was singing in the choir in our congregation that I realized I actually really did believe in God, like deep down completely believed it. And it was while we were singing, and I sang the words along with everyone else, and as those words came out of my mouth, I just knew it somehow. So for all of us who really connect to God through the arts, thanks again. You have seen the workings on Capitol Hill, in the White House, also now in a think tank, other ways. Have you ever considered running for office?
Not really, but thank you for asking. It would be a really rough time, I think, to be running for Congress. It's an uglier time, I think, than it used to be, and it takes a special person to be willing to kind of just deal with all of the security issues, social media villainization, and the like.
What would you recommend to a young person coming to DC today, like you did after college, to help them hold on to their faith in this atmosphere?
DC can be a heady place. There is a strong undertow to the political world where often shabby political behavior gets positively reinforced. One is often rewarded or applauded for the quick takedown, the snarky response, the one-upmanship, trying to dominate or humiliate your perceived political adversary. That kind of ugly behavior is positively reinforced and rewarded in the political world. And so I think for young people who come to DC and want to keep following Jesus, it's really important to get immersed in a faith community, find a good church, stay in Bible studies, and get to know other people who share your faith who may not share your politics, and come to love and care for them as people. Part of that is also extending hospitality. DC can be a really lonely place. And I think one of the best things to not only better root one in one's faith, but just kind of, you know, rooting one personally in reality, is extending hospitality to other people, really getting to know them, spending time with them, coming to care for them. There's something about them that when you're able to do that and see another creature made in the image of God who may not agree with you on all the political figures, but is loved by God and be able to appreciate who they are and were made to be, there's something that's really rooting and grounding about that. And there's definitely wonderful faith communities to join here in DC. So that would be one of the first things I would recommend, is just get rooted in community. And often that means less time on social media and more time spending time with people in real life. And that's a great thing to do.
Can you put your finger on why you continue to believe or believe in the first place? What makes you feel like God is really there?
I once heard someone say that doubt is not the opposite of belief. Almost all people of faith go through periods of doubt. There have definitely been periods over the last few decades where you just think, gosh, especially when you see people of faith behaving really poorly, acting vilely, and doing really ugly things somehow using the name of Jesus. That can be somewhat disorienting. But I guess part of what keeps me rooted is just going back to scripture, to gospel, and the person of Jesus, where he offered a very countercultural way of understanding life, the world, and everything in it. I think there's something not only really beautiful about his vision, but also deep truths there, how he called us to be. In some ways, the adverbial is important. The what is vital. The how is also important. And Jesus was very clear about how we are to live and what the purpose of our faith is, loving God, loving neighbor. C.S. Lewis was definitely kind of a formative influence on, you know, kind of my imagination, as well as, like, you know, a lot of other people from, you know, my generation. But, you know, he talked about how kind of it was through that light that he saw the world, that there was an illumination to it. At the end of the day, I don't know of a more beautiful hope that I also believe is true than what faith offers.
Many thanks to Sherry Harder for speaking with me. This episode was produced by Heidi Hansen. Our production team also includes Heather Bigley, Aaliyah Alexander, Nick Levitt, Ocean Marshall, and James Sturdivant. Our post-production sound designers are Mark Hansen, Lauren Sandberg, and DJ Cromarty. Did you know that In Good Faith has an occasional newsletter? Why not subscribe? InGoodFaithPodcast.com is the place to do that. In Good Faith is committed to the idea that we all benefit from hearing people of widely varying backgrounds share their personal experience with faith and belief. In fact, we think people with such experience deserve some of our best listening. Find us on Instagram and Facebook at In Good Faith Podcast. Subscribe to the YouTube channel for extended interviews. In Good Faith is a production of BYU Radio. I'm Stephen Cap Perry. I hope you join me again soon, right here, In Good Faith.
Do you find yourself avoiding the news because of how depressive and divisive it all seems, but you still want to stay informed? Well, you are not alone. Top of Mind, a BYU Radio original podcast, understands how polarizing these conversations can be and wants to help you engage in the challenge while seeking and understanding. With the goal of developing empathy for others, Top of Mind helps you clarify your own views, become an effective advocate for the things you care about, and can challenge your way of thinking so you can become a better citizen and a kinder neighbor. Listen to Top of Mind now on the BYU Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.